Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch and Track Podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show and co-produced by Mr. IVEST. I'm the Dude.
And I'm Grim. Today, we're here with some old friends with a brand new name, A Band of Gypsies.
Woohoo!
By Jimi Hendrix. This just says Hendrix on the front because this is a notable departure from the band known as the Jimi Hendrix Experience, consisting of Noel Redding and Mitch Mitchell. This has a different lineup. Billy Cox on bass, Buddy Miles on drums.
Oh, yeah. His first recording without the original lineup. Now, he had played Woodstock with Gypsy Sun and Rainbows is kind of the name that he had done, but Mitch Mitchell was the drummer. Yeah. Billy Cox was on bass, and they actually had a couple other guys there as well. Yeah. But nobody Miles. So
nobody Miles.
But we are here today, Grim, because this is a live album.
This is a live album. So what's the question?
Well, it's a big question. Is this the best live album of all time? I definitely think it's up there. There's a lot of good ones. A lot of good ones.
I'm going to say it's a top fiver, maybe. I'd say for me, it's probably a top three in rankings outside of outside of my own. I would say it's probably still at least got to be in the top five.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we're going to talk about some. I think that kind of goes to we're taking this live album sort of very loosely. We're not talking about, hey, it was just like, you know, it's not Dave Matthews live at Red Rocks on June 22nd, you know, 2003, which I'm sure everyone on this channel has. It's, you know, even this is sort of a compilation. You know, tracks were taken from different shows during this 2-day period where they were recording, but there's a lot of them that essentially it's, you know, a live album. So tracks that were live, but there's even one like you were talking about with Stones, you know, which I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, we can get your yayas. I really like that. That's a great record, but
it's not pure.
Yeah, right? Because they redid vocals. They put vocals in after the fact, and I don't know if it was due to technical issues or they didn't like the performance, but it's still widely considered a live album. But I mean, dude, the list of great live albums is kind of long and distinguished. I mean, Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison, you mentioned.
Yep. Frampton, and San Quentin.
Both of them. Frampton Comes Alive. Does that ring a bell? The MC5's Kick Out the Jams, their live debut album.
Yep.
Leon Live. Now that's interesting because that was one show. I didn't realize that, but that whole record, three record set was from one show. So that's cool.
Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, obviously, you know, from the 90s, we have a lot of the Unplugged shows, Alice in Chains, Nirvana. Those actually like came out as albums. Like SCP, to my knowledge, was never officially released like as an album. I don't know if Pearl Jam's was.
Really?
Maybe. I'm sure somebody out there, I mean, you know, you can get recordings of it. I don't know if it was actually released around that time like as an album. Now a couple others, think about Led Zeppelin, the BBC Sessions.
Dude, I would. That's a pretty good one, I think. You
know, Song Remains the Same.
Yeah, I like BBC Sessions more, but yeah, that's still very good. Yep.
Yeah. A couple others that people are sort of hailed as U2's Under a Blood Red Sky. James Brown Live at the Apollo. The band, The Last Waltz.
Oh, yeah, that's very good, yeah.
We talked about the Rolling Stones, dude, the Rock and Roll Circus. Now, that's sort of a compilation of a bunch of musicians, but it's
all fantastic.
Live, and it's all pretty sweet.
And best live version or best version of The Who's a Quick One.
Yeah.
While he's away, right. I mean, sure.
Absolutely. Dude, Pink Floyd Pulse, a lot of people do regard that, but since that's not,
it's not really in our Pink minds, Floyd, sorry,
it's you know, as much flack as, you know, we may have given Roger Waters, it doesn't have Roger Waters, and to me,
that's
full Pink Floyd. Now here's another really good one that people really, really love, dude. And that is the Who live at Leeds.
Yeah, right? That's one I think I need to get, man. Because
I think my dad has that one.
That's that would have been just after, it was released in 70. So probably very near that Woodstock performance, which was phenomenal. So I can only imagine that that's a really good one to get your hands on.
I'm sure it's pretty great. You know, a couple other ones, you know, I don't know if a Monterey Pop Festival like album was released. I know Jimmy, I believe Jimi Hendrix had a, you know, Monterey Pop Festival album, you know, Jimmy Live at Monterey, I think it's what it's called. And there's also the DVD of it, which is fantastic. They did have a Woodstock compilation. I was actually at the record store the other day. Now, I don't know when it came out, but there's a Woodstock and there's like volume 2 and even volume 3.
I know I have
those original. Could be more recent pressings, though. I don't know.
I have a very an old one of the original Woodstock.
Okay.
They actually bill it more like it's the soundtrack to the movie, which is funny. Because really it follows what you see in the movie. It's those audio recordings of those performances, but again, all live.
Yeah. So those are all, I mean, this is, you know, some stiff competition here. It was interesting because I've always held Band of Gypsies as in very high regard. And then I actually started thinking about it and looking through the list and I was like, damn, there's actually a lot of really good live albums and in compilations.
Part of, I think, what makes this so special is that it was, unfortunately, it didn't pan out that well timing wise and in context of Jimi Hendrix's life, but it was like a complete shift for him musically. Yep. And I know that in the Miles Davis documentary, I guess Miles had been turned on to this album and that's kind of what prompted him to be like, I want to play with this guy. And they were supposed to do something together, but it never happened.
Yep. I heard it was in like all of us, and we'll get into the tracks though. But Miles Davis was like, Machine Gun.
Yeah.
It's just like, I mean, that's the standout track, at least for me and for most people on this album. It's just absolutely exceptional. And we'll get into the tracks, you know, in a little bit. But yeah, you're completely right. Huge departure. All of a sudden, you replace Noel Redding and Mitch Mitchell with Billy Cox and Buddy Miles.
Yeah, two white English guys with like an old buddy of his from the army and then Buddy Miles.
Yeah.
So he's now playing with all black musicians and like it's just a fucking awesome, you know?
It's absolutely fantastic. And they, you know, they did kind of get together. It was interesting to go back and read more about this album. Cause I remember hearing about it, but essentially it was kind of like hey, Jimmy's got to put out an album because he's got this
dispute with a manager or something. Yeah.
So essentially what happened there was before Jimi Hendrix was, you know, like Jimi Hendrix, it was like, I think 1965, this guy, his name is, I believe, Ed Chalpin, and basically had him signed a contract. And then Jimi Hendrix went on to make music, Jimi Hendrix Experience under Warner Brothers. But this guy eventually made a deal with Capitol Records. And so they ended up going to court and Capitol Records basically said, hey, you know, we have this contract with Jimi Hendrix that gives us like exclusive rights. And we're supposed to have this, this essentially a record deal with him. And so what happened was they ended up settling out of court. And what was part of the settlement was basically Capitol Records was going to get Jimi Hendrix's next album, which turned out to be this album. And ultimately, Jimmy just wanted to, I think, fulfill that contract obligation. I mean, what's the best way to do it? Hey, let's just put out a live album instead of, you know, spending months in the studio and having a well-crafted, you know, album. This was a great way to do it. And so, you know, he got Billy Cox and Buddy Miles together and they just kind of started jamming. And, you know, really, this is sort of what they came up with. But even I forget who said it, but they said basically like a week before or they spent a whole week in December. Like this was like January 1st, but they spent like 12 to 18 hours a day for a week just playing and jamming and kind of coming up with songs and everything. Yeah, then they had this show here at the Fillmore East over like four shows over 2 days, and ended up recording a bunch of it just to kind of get this album out and everything.
Yeah, and you had mentioned too, what did you say in the course of those two shows? It was like 24 different songs they recorded, and then you end up with this record that has what, six?
Yeah. So there were over the four shows they played, apparently, there were 47 recordings, 24 different songs.
Okay, unique songs.
And I believe they recorded all the shows, but they even said that the first show was really just kind of like a warm up.
You can find streaming. There is recordings of, it'll say like live at the Fillmore East this day, you know. There's other versions of these songs, but they're not these versions.
Right.
So yeah. I don't know how it worked when, so it ended up basically being January 1. So a New Year's Eve show, which turned into, you know, through to New Year's Day.
Yeah.
And then the same thing the following day. So were the other shows just like earlier? I mean, you're not going to have a.
Yeah, I guess. I know there was something like in the wiki about it, but essentially, yeah, they had, you know, kind of like an earlier evening show and then a later one, but they would kind of go on to the next morning, day. So they basically have started just referring to them as the first, second, third, and fourth show. Now, all the songs that are on this album come from the third and fourth show.
Yeah.
And they're not, it's not like in any order or anything like that. Like, oh, this is how they played this one. Basically, my understanding is they got all the tapes, and then Eddie Kramer, who Jimmy had worked with, and Jimmy just kind of sat down and like listened to the songs. And, you know, there were some technical issues that they had. You brought up to me how Jimmy's guitar goes out of tune a little bit in Machine Gun. Then they talk about, you know, how challenging that was. And that was that, I think, helped them maybe in the editing process of being like, OK, well, we can't use this one.
Yeah.
Some of the mics were going in and out and whatnot. So, you know, even Eddie Kramer, I mean, essentially what he said, he's like, mixing the Band of Gypsies album was a challenge. It was like Jimmy was really almost pressured into doing it. and I think you've heard this story as well, hearing Buddy Miles. He lets loose and has fun
A
little bit on this with his singing. But,
maybe a little too much fun for Jimmy.
Jimmy was a little annoyed, and he was like, and Eddie Kramer basically said, he was like, yeah, we were sitting there, and he was like, oh man, I wish Buddy would shut the fuck up, which is, you know, pretty harsh, but I can understand maybe where he's saying some, because, and Jimmy even asked, like, can we cut some of these parts out? And they actually did end up cutting some parts out of even these six songs.
Oh, really?
Shorten them in length. And once we get into the tracks, I haven't noted like a few of them.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was kind of interesting. And yeah, like you said, so what were your thoughts on like the six, you know, they had 24 to choose from, and they really only chose six. Two of them are Buddy Miles songs too.
Yeah, true. I think it was a good choice, because I guess I didn't, I have not seen a definitive list of
everything else.
This is exactly what all was recorded. But I think what they're trying to do is show you that, like, they're basically trying to showcase, this is the next phase of Jimi Hendrix's career, of his songwriting, of his music. It was probably the right choice for that, because it is different. The only thing that's remotely like what he did, I think, before is really Machine Gun. The only thing that even kind of comes close to is the 15-minute version of Voodoo Child on Electric Ladyland.
Electric Ladyland?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and so one thing, it was interesting that I read, is that on the first show that they did, it was all new stuff. They didn't play anything off that the experience had done or anything like that. And then on the second show, they played a bunch of stuff that Jimi Hendrix experience had done. And then I think they said the third and fourth shows were pretty much
like a mix.
A lot of it was new. And then after the main set, I don't know if he played with the other two members, but basically he came out, he played Wild Thing, Hey Joe, and Purple Haze. It's kind of crowd satisfiers,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
You know.
Now, did you see the original cover that they did for Band of Gypsies?
Oh, man, yeah. That was, it's a weird cover, man.
Yeah, it's like these weird little cover. Dolls.
Yeah, but it's what, Jimmy, who else? Brian Jones.
Yeah.
And then there was two other people. I forget who was on it. But yeah, it was pretty an interesting cover, to say the least. Bob Dylan, and then John Peel. Should I know John Peel?
John Peel is a very famous radio host, and he's, put it this way, his career is long enough that he's noted here. And I also, on some of like the expanded versions of some of the Pavement albums, they have like sessions that they did from John Peel's show. So like, right, you're talking already like 30 years from the 60s into the 90s. So this guy's been around a long time. Yeah.
He's got quite the resume. It sounds like.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. It was interesting. So after the album comes out, you know, Jimmy basically said, and I have a quote here. He was like, "I wasn't too satisfied with the album. If it had been up to me, I never would have put it out. From a musician's point of view, it was not a good recording. And I was out of tune on a few things. Not enough preparation went into it. And it came out a bit grisly. The thing was, we owed the record company an album and they were pushing us. So here it is."
Yeah.
So,
I get that. I mean, you're always going to have that perfectionist thing, but
it's a live. I mean, dude, it's a live recording. I mean, you know, and sure, they could have, you know, if they had had months and months of actual like, you know, preparation, they had been on tour together, you know, for,
that's a big one. You know, I think
extended tours and everything to really just like work out and perfect these songs and everything.
And not and just like you a decide, tour of the States, like Japan, Australia, you know, really getting used to things. Yeah.
Explore the space. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, could it have been better and tighter? Yeah, maybe. Sure. That's what, you know, never mind. I still think it's a really good recording of, some really cool songs that, you know, for his kind of, you can see a little bit where he's going, where he wanted to go after kind of the experience and whatnot. And like you talked about earlier, man, I mean, can you just imagine what him and Miles Davis might've come up with? And that would have been quite the fusion right there. Quite the fusion. So, but we will have to dream. Maybe with AI, dude, we could create it.
Some person did on YouTube. They because around that time, Miles Davis, I think, was working on the soundtrack to A Tribute to Jack John, or I think it was a soundtrack. But anyways, his album that's called A Tribute to Jack Johnson. Okay. And John McLaughlin, I believe, ended up playing guitar on that. But this guy on YouTube did like a version where they redid the backing parts. And then he played what he thought like Hendrix would have played. And I mean, it was kind of an interesting, I didn't listen to the whole thing, but I just listened to it for a minute. It was kind of an interesting sort of what if scenario. The recording was too clean though.
Oh, I gotcha. Well, I think we should maybe talk about the tracks a little bit. This is, you know, this is a different type of sort of album. I don't think we've ever done a episode on a live album before.
No, I don't think so either.
So it's as I was listening to the tracks, it was kind of, I was like, oh man, I mean, not that there's not a lot to say about these, but it's different than listening to a studio recording.
Well, yeah, because you don't have all these layers to talk about. It's basically you have a drummer, a bassist, and a guitar, and two vocalists.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So, talk about those tracks. So we got track number one, Grim. We're going to lead off with Who Knows?
Yeah. Now, I remember hearing this for the first time. I was probably in like somewhere mid high school. Yeah. And it's like I didn't even know about it. And then you heard, I remember hearing it and you hear Who Knows and you're like, man, this is sweet. Like, why did I not know about this? And it's right. just, it's sort of, I don't know, it's just a little more funky, upbeat, and raw. Absolutely. And just kind of, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's great. Because
great you, riff. I mean,
with all of these songs, especially this one, I think changes, maybe Machine Gun might be a little, we'll get to it. But the influence, and there's just such a difference between Buddy Miles and Billy Cox and the way that he played and they played together than Mitch Mitchell and Noel Redding.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was just, you can just really, really hear a difference right away. And again, I just think it's a great, great track to start off with. I love the groove that they get into. And I like how Buddy Miles and Jimmy are kind of singing back and forth.
Yeah, I like that too.
You know, they're Buddy Miles got, I mean, a phenomenal voice. I yeah, love his voice. And, you know, we'll get to the track changes in a little bit. But I think, you know, this is just a very cool way to sort of start the album. I was watching the DVD that I have, and the DVD actually includes more songs than what's on here. So they do have more recordings. And there is a section in part that it just like cuts out for a second. Now, I don't know if it's probably not in the recording of
oh, but it's in the video.
But it's in the video. And it's kind of funny because all of a sudden it's playing. And then you hear it's almost like somebody pulled the plug and like it sounds like. You can hear, so it's almost like somebody would be recording at a concert with their iPhone for like 2 seconds, and they like you can hear that audio, and then it jumps back in. It's
just, oh, that's funny.
It's kind of funny, but yeah, man, I think this is a really cool track, and
I mean, like his solos. What, is
nine,
the
nine minutes, pedal? almost 10 minutes on this track.
Yeah,
so yeah, they definitely let it go. Now, dude. Track number two, this is just the standout. This is the one everybody talks about. And
how can you not? So we talked about, is this the best live album of all time? Maybe not the best live album, but is this the best live song? Shit, man, that's a different conversation. Because it may be. I mean, even though he goes... A
quick one while he's away, The Who?
Yeah, but dude, the solo in Machine Gun is just obscenely awesome. It is... And it's not the fastest you'll ever hear anyone play. It just doesn't matter. And it's so funny because when you watch the video, he is remarkably, like, it almost seems disengaged somehow in a way because, you know, he's not putting the guitar behind his back. He's not playing it with his mouth. He's not doing any of that shit. He just plays it in such a, like, meaningful sort of way.
Well, it's funny you say that because some people have commented on that, like people who actually reviewed the show and even Billy Cox and Buddy Miles. And essentially, Jimmy knew that, I mean, hey, we're recording this. And yeah. So he wanted it to be as good and like as like. So they said he even in those shows 3 and 4, and even though it was the next night, I think he knew that they were going to use the kind of the takes from that show. And so when he was playing, he was a little more statuesque and just kind of like there and making sure he got the best recording possible and everything. So it's kind of funny you bring that up. But yeah, dude, I mean, obviously the solo and everything, but dude, Buddy Miles, just the just the drums. I mean, dude, it sounds like Machine Gun and guns firing and just everything. Like, it's just, it's so amazing. I mean, dude, what the songs that, 12 and a half minutes. Like,
yeah,
it is. It's pretty cool, man.
And I hate to quote Bono, but you know, that 60s documentary that you got, and he says it's like he put Vietnam into the amplifier. And that's a good quote.
It's a great quote.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
because he did. Quote, and it's, I love it. And even when you look at the Wikipedia entry for this, for the album, the clip is like this, that they put from Machine Gun is the sustained note of the solo, which goes on for a long time. And you get that variation. No wonder his sound,
guitar went out of tune.
Because he's just hitting the wah-wah the whole time. So that's why it kind of makes that sort of back and forth.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the reason that he went out of tune was because if you watch him, he's really like using the whammy bar, not just to bend things, but almost to like make other sounds too.
Yeah. Yeah. So if people haven't heard this, which I imagine most people who are watching this episode have heard this, but if you haven't,
like, I'm sorry, man, first of all, but there's still time.
Yeah. I mean, what I would love to know. Yeah. Is there a better live song? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of opinions out there.
Oh, yeah, but there will be.
But, you know, I mean, you know, this 12 and a half minute version of Two Step is probably, you know, really high up there. I know it's one of your favorites. Yeah. So, all right.
Definitely moving not on. As good of a solo.
Track number three.
Side two.
Side two. Track one. Track three. Changes. So this song was actually trimmed.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah. This song was trimmed. And I think Buddy, you know, he gets into his doop-a-doop, doop.
Oh,
you know,
like, yeah.
I mean, but dude, his voice is so smooth, man.
It is really good.
Oh my gosh.
And I would be so okay. Dude, his background vocals at the end of Machine Gun
are great.
Fantastic.
Oh, shoot me down.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways, yeah, he does have a really good voice. I mean, you can't deny it.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, obviously the way Jimmy plays on this track is pretty amazing. But yeah, I mean, this is it's cool. They said that pretty early on when Jimmy and Eddie Kramer sat down to start going through the tracks, Jimmy had already decided that he wanted a couple of Buddy Miles songs on it. So he didn't even want all this to be his, you know, just all his tracks.
His magnum opus.
Yeah. I mean, I think he probably really enjoyed, like, hey, wow, this is awesome. Like, Buddy Miles wrote an awesome song, and I just get to sit back and just play guitar and come up with sweet riffs and let it rip, right?
Because I think it's noted that he was not the biggest fan of his own voice.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I don't think Jimmy's probably known, because he was such an amazing guitar player, not known for his vocals. I mean, I like his voice. I think it always fits the songs, you know, really great. But when you hear... Yeah, you hear Jimmy sing and then you hear Buddy Miles sing, there's a big difference.
Oh,
there's
a very big difference. But for some reason, it works well together.
They complement each other for sure.
And I don't think a lot of people know that it was actually Jimi Hendrix who sang the Ballad of Billy Joe that was credited to Bobby Gentry. But if you slow that recording down, you can very clearly hear Jimi Hendrix. Yeah, don't you remember that from the original Dude and Grim show?
I don't think I do.
Oh, well, you're about to get a present after this podcast.
Can't.
Power to Love, track four.
Power to Love. Now, not Huey Lewis in the News, The Power of Love.
I know. Now,
is a great song.
What's really weird here is that it's called Power to Love, but when you sing along to it, you're singing with the power of soul, anything, you know, he doesn't even really say power to love in there. I always think of the song as Power of Soul.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I think even, and I don't remember this in the audio of But on the DVD that I was watching, I believe Buddy Miles even calls it Power of Love.
Oh, could which, be. Songs of the same name.
Songs of the same name. I will say that I would probably have to go with Huey Lewis's version just because it's so good.
Yeah. But I do. One thing I like is how they throw in that vocal delay on this song where that one part where he says, so like it's weird and you don't expect it and it comes out of nowhere, but it's like right. So great at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, it's with the power of soul, anything is possible.
Yeah.
I think actually, and I think Billy Cox sings on this track as well.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure he does just a little bit. I mean, background vocal, but, I think that's cool too, that they all sort of sing. Now I know like, but Jimmy, God, what's the track? I'm pretty sure. Doesn't Noel Redding have like a song?
Little on Miss Hendrix's? Strange.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. It's on Electric Ladyland. It's not awesome.
No,
I mean, it's okay. Strange,
but it ain't this, it ain't changes. All right, so Grim.
Then now that we know about the power to love, now we want to talk about the message of love.
Message of love.
Now, I think his guitar part on here is
just... Is it Message of Love or Message to Love?
Message of Love on the record.
Interesting, because on Apple it says Message to Love, so...
Well, yeah. I guess Apple can take it up here with Capitol Records.
Unless you have a special edition misprint that's worth like thousands of dollars, somebody would pay for it. Anyways. This is really cool. I love you hear Buddy Miles in the background. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
So his background vocals are really good.
But yeah, I like his guitar. Like the part, his part is just so, it's really sticky, icky, icky.
Yeah.
You know?
Sticky, icky. And then we go to the last track, Grim. Dude, this is another Buddy Miles.
Yeah, we gotta live together.
Gotta live together.
Now, I love how this ends where everyone's kind of clapping and it's...
Yeah, they really get that crowd involved and everything.
And his guitar part, again, is just real choppy and...
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough... Dude, this track was pared down from 15 minutes to just over 5.
Oh, wow. I could see that, though. Yeah.
And I think this might have been another one where Buddy got a little...
I'm sure. I'm sure. It's his song.
And if you listen to this album, you can definitely understand. Like, and it did kind of annoy Jimmy a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. I just think he just probably just didn't like it. But this is a good funky jam. And it's, you know, definitely get the crowd involved. Probably like more like, hey, you know, end of the night track. All right, guys.
Oh,
you know,
yeah. It's
thanks for coming.
It's late.
It's time to go home.
Yeah. Now, I will say, I can't tell you how many times I've listened to this album. A lot of times. Now, with that said, and after doing our homework on this, I will definitely be listening for those cuts to see if you can hear them.
Yeah.
Because you don't notice them if you don't know that they're not there. But once you know that they're there, I bet you can figure it out.
Yeah. You're like, wait, you know, where's that? Is there an obvious point? And then can you hear some sort of especially if you're getting the audience involved? I think part of it, too, I would like to know because it was, you know, it was recorded like it was a live album. So that's, you know, if you have everything tracked, you know, and it, you know, you can make a good cut, but you're right. It'd be interesting to see where they did that. So, all right, Grim, both of our favorite tracks, Easy Call, Machine Gun. This is a live album and we are going to scratch it, even though there's only 6 songs. We did it with Wish You Were Here.
We yeah, can do it with this. Put one in so. The chamber because obviously this is getting scratched with a bullet.
Machine gun. No bullets. Yeah. No bullets. All right, Graham, you going first or am I?
I can.
Okay, go for it.
I think a lot of people would find this to be a you-know-what moment. We'll see if you do. I would scratch Changes.
Yeah, man, I don't know about that. Really?
Why? Yeah. Because I like the guitar playing on the other songs better. And I do like the way that We Gotta Live Together ends. I just like, for a live show, that's just a good end. And I wouldn't end it without that. And Changes is fine, but it just, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
You throwing it out? Actually,
no.
Okay.
I'm not throwing it out. But what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to scratch the other Buddy Miles song, and that's your song that you just liked, We Gotta Live Together.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Jimmy pared it down. They pared it down from 15 minutes to just over five. I mean, if you're going to do that, then
just pare it down to nothing.
Cut it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I really wrestled with that. It's just that I like the way that ends this. It feels like the end of a concert.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that.
But I get your point.
I'm always like, I think one thing that annoys me, I don't like it when I kind of don't like it. I mean, I guess it's the clapping, but in live shows when they're like, oh, we're going to get the
everyone crowd to sing along.
And we're like, holding them up. Yeah. I'm like, no, I want you to sing the song. I don't need the asshole next to me like singing. I can already, you know,
hear
I don't
them. Need
15,000 other people,
yeah.
You know, in the Enormo Dome singing it too. So, but yeah, so that's what I'd go with. Now, Grim, the ultimate question though is, is this the best album, live album of all time? Is this your best live album of all time?
Probably.
You said it's top three.
Top three.
What else is in there for you?
Leon Live.
Okay.
And what would be the other one? I really do like Get Your Ya-Ya's Out, but I still it gets disqualified for the overdubs.
Yeah.
I gotcha. I'd have to go with like Cash at San Quentin. And yeah. We've talked about this offline.
San Quentin or you want San Quentin over
Folsom. Because he sings the same damn song twice because they like it so much. So like much. There's just something about that I can't. And they put it on the record. That's the other part I love is that that moment was so awesome that they were like, this is how it was, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So. Yeah. I'd have to go with, Johnny Cash at I mean, Folsom pick or San Quentin.
Pick a prison. Yeah,
pick a prison. Just because, I mean, who had done that before? And it's like, dude, he's playing in front of like, you know, murderers and all these people. I'm sure there's armed guards around and everything. And he's just like having a blast doing it. You know, I'd have to go with that. Probably, dude, I love the Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus. I know it's a compilation.
It's still live.
You know, many different people, but it's still live.
That is an excellent choice.
Yeah.
And it was an excellent birthday present. Thank you. Or Christmas. I don't remember which one.
Yeah.
I think it was Christmas.
So, everyone, definitely let us know where you rank this in your live album list. Also, what other live albums? I know there's a ton of live albums out there. I went through like a list online. I know Queen has a bunch, Kiss has a bunch, and people really dig those. The ones we talked about are just sort of my favorites.
I can tell you this must have been a repress because it says that it is the Gold Record Award certified. So it did sell pretty well early on.
It did.
Is obviously not a first pressing, but that's
not a first pressing. That's all right.
Still a darn good one.
All right, Grim, I think we're out.
It's time to go.
Scratch a
Track is produced by the Dude and Grim. Additional music provided by Moore and the Tings. Copyright 2023. The Dude and Grim Show.